Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. Our first guest today is going to be Diana Johnston. She is the author of Circle in the Darkness, Memoir of a World Watcher, and is a very popular, important book. And recently, on April the 7th, in Consortium News, Diana has written an article in response to a petition, something, a document produced by Syrian oppositionists, I guess we could call them, living in the West, who are very critical of American investigative reporters and commentators who have been opposing U.S. policies in Syria. And the article alleges that the people like the Gray Zone, Max Blumenthal, and others, Ben Norton, are somehow agents of Assad, or they are supporters of Putin, and basically doing a lot of damage because they are doing the work of the devil, I guess. They are the fools supporting a second kind of imperialism. Well, Diana, you've written a really wonderful article in Consortium News. It was a breath of fresh air for me. I guess we could ask you, first of all, why you decided to take this up?
Well, I decided to take it up because the letter was really very insulting. I wasn't mentioned, but I identify voluntarily with the people who were attacked for being opposed to U.S. imperialism. And it was a very nasty document. I mean, it wasn't just arguing an issue. It was very insulting. It caused people to have no principles, lazy, etc. The very things that they aren't, because these people, in fact, like the Gray Zone, are extremely principled. They're working very hard. And the letter was highly insulting, and I think that made me feel like rushing to the defense of my colleagues, because this was extremely, it's very unfair and dishonest attack.
I was struck by this, here we are at a time when actually in America, there is a political consensus between the Democrats and the Republicans, who on foreign policy are inseparable twins. Maybe in the case of Joe Biden, he even shows signs that he might be more aggressive than Donald Trump. There is a U.S. base in northeast Syria. And there, as I say, there's a consensus. And we've been blessed, in my opinion, that some of these young journalists have done their homework, and now they find themselves, hearing this talk. First of all, you point out these are Western-based people who are trying to leverage the identity of being Syrian, right?
Well, we've had that. You see, that's become a constant, especially in the Middle East. Whenever the United States is wanting to overturn a regime, there are always people there, usually Western educated intellectuals, who are supporting American intervention on the grounds that it will bring democracy. And of course, there's also the unspoken, perhaps, grounds that they'll get a good job in the American-backed puppet regime. I can't be sure of that, but that's happened in the past. We saw that both in Libya and in Iraq, that you had intellectuals who were talking about bringing democracy to their countries thanks to the U.S. weapons. And in fact, they did come in temporarily for some position, except since they had no support in their own countries, they didn't last there very long. These people are talking about democracy, the democracy in Syria they will bring, but there's no evidence whatsoever that they could get more than their families to vote for them if there were this democracy. We're just supposed to believe that because they say they're pro-Western, that therefore that they want to put in a regime like Switzerland or something, something that has not been done with previous interventions of the United States. It does not end up well. And we see from the experience that it doesn't end up well.
You take up some of the popular illusions, which actually many of us thought had gone by the boards. They seem to believe in the phenomenon called the Arab Spring, and the revolution, as you call it, the revolution that wasn't. Can you talk about what are they getting at? What is this idea that there was a revolution happening in Syria?
You see, there's this notion that that if you get rid of the dictator, of course, this word dictator is a favorite word because it's associated with Hitler. So you just say dictator and people think of Hitler again. Although there are various types of regimes, various types of government, some of them with elements of what they would call democracy, but it's not our democracy. The thing is that Western democracy, what you have to realize is that Western democracy is a product of evolution that is a fairly recent development in human history. It came with the rise of the bourgeoisie and a certain amount of consensus in society. You need a consensus to have a regime where you have parties that vote. And if the other party wins, you say, okay, that's fine. Maybe I'll win next time. That doesn't necessarily work. And societies have deep divisions where there are groups that fear each other. And in countries like that, you may need some kind of authoritarian rule, because if you have an election and the one side wins, the other side will take up arms against it because they don't feel safe. You see, you have to have a basic consensus to have Western democracy work. Now, it's funny that we're losing that in the United States, by the way. But that doesn't necessarily exist in all these countries. And it sometimes takes a special kind of party or leader in order to hold a country together. That was certainly the case of Libya. And you get rid of the leader and there's no more country. It just falls apart. And there's this notion, especially in the United States, because Americans think that they are the norm of humanity and their system is what everybody wants. And if you just let everybody do what they want, they'd all be Americans and everything would be America. Well, that, speaking of naive, I have something to say about the person behind this letter, which I think is Gilbert Achcar, who is the person who apparently gathered the signatures for this letter and who wrote an article in The Nation, which sets out his very simplistic ideas, which accuse others of being simplistic. And he comes up with a notion.
Yeah, you know, it was, yeah, that, The Nation, by the way, has been very, very disappointing in the past few years. I mean, no question that they have punked out on all these issues. I recall Achcar, of course, being very big for the removal of Gaddafi in Syria. And I noticed that in their little letter, they really don't talk about Libya.
Oh, you bet they don't. I mean,
they went through the same arguments with Libya.
Oh yes. Well, yes, he'll still argue for Libya. And one has to wonder about him. But you see, his argument, this very insulting, he, in an article in The Nation, as in that letter, it's very insulting to people who are protesting against U.S. intervention, military intervention. And he calls them neo-campists. Well, you have to explain that. He says, Well, back in the Cold War, people belong to a camp. First of all, that simplifies things enormously. It's a very Trotskyist way of talking about communists in France, for instance. He's kind of referring to French communists who would support the Soviet Union, and it's in whatever it did because it was they believed in the revolution, etc. Now, that's at a time that the Soviet Revolution still inspired a lot of people and they belonged to that camp. Now he is saying that people who object to US intervention in Syria, for instance, are neo-campists and their camp is Assad. Now this is totally, totally absurd because there's no such thing as an Assad camp in the West. Nobody in the West is actually criticizing US intervention in Syria because they belong to an Assad camp. That's totally invented and it's meant to smear people as some kind of archaic Stalinist. Very Trotskyist approach, if I may say so. And it's totally dishonest because the point is, what are your values? The values of people against imperialism is that they don't want endless war. The issue is war. It's an international issue. It's an international issue. Now he is saying that the value that counts is self-determination of people in these countries. That's a domestic issue, which is an issue for the people of those countries. It is not our issue. Our issue is the international issue of the behavior of the United States in its military aggression, its sanctions, and all the measures it takes to destroy countries. It's an international issue, and it has nothing to do with the nature of the country regime involved.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Diana Johnston. By the way, I want to remind everybody of Diana's book, Circle in the Darkness, Memoir of a World Watcher. It is striking that they actually, and I think in a way I feel that they're losing ground. There's a lot of that nastiness and insulting language suggests to me that they're a little bit intellectually desperate. But they actually argue in their letter that the United States is not centrally involved with Syria. That's hard.
Well, that's pretty absurd because, of course, they also think it's ridiculous to say that the United States is centrally involved in the world. I mean, they also say that, which is even crazier. The United States has got military bases all over the world. No other country has that. It has a military budget that is equal to that of its major allies and adversaries, all put together. It's larger than that. Now, there's no other country that can come close to it in terms of imperialism. It's also enacting sanctions that are strangling economies all over the world. Nobody else is doing that. So the United States is really quite unique in its aggressive behavior. And as for Syria, of course, it's occupying part of Syria, and it has the CIA secretly for years was arming and training Islamist extremists whose goal is to destroy the secular state of Syria. Because look, this thing about values, what are the values that they're fighting for? Now, Syria is, maybe you don't like the political setup, but it's a country that has been modernizing. It provides education. It allows all religions to exist. And the rebels that the United States has been supporting want to get rid of that. They want to get rid of women's rights and they want to enforce a particular brand of extremist Islam. And these are the values that supposedly that we're supposed to be supporting.
Yeah, it's curious they use that word parochial, and yet when they talk, you just outlined the fact that Syria is a developing country. It's, by the way, it's called Socialist Republic of Syria. It's a secular state, and everybody agrees that it is. Meanwhile, they're opposed by jihadist fanatics receiving their money and weapons from the U.S. And yet, when Mr. Ashkar and his friends talk about this, they want us to believe that there's some type of anarchist cooperatives who are putting together a new Syria. The only one I'm aware of is Murray Bookchin's group from New York. They're inviting us to be very parochial. It seems to me we're supposed to be in a neighborhood in New York when we think about Syria.
Well, I think you're talking about the Kurds, who've been very favored by the United States and by Israel, by the way. It's hard to talk about this without mentioning Israel, although they talk about it without mentioning Israel, which is, I think, quite revealing right there, because the fact is that breaking Syria up has been a Israeli goal for a long, long time. And the primary enemy for Israel is Arab nationalism. Now, Syria, like Iraq, were Arab nationalists, and so was Gaddafi, although he got sick of Arabs and decided he was an African nationalist instead. But it was also progressive nationalism, not religious regimes. And there's a tendency on the West, starting with the British, you go back to Lawrence of Arabia, the imperialists have always rather preferred the religious people because they feel they can manipulate them. And Arab nationalism attempts to form a real state. But the United States is occupying part of Syria. Turkey is essentially occupying the part around Idlib, which has a concentration of Islamists. Israel is occupying the Golan Heights. So this project of tearing apart Syria is continuing right now. And this letter is in fact a support for the ongoing effort to tear apart Syria. And above all, the United States is enforcing sanctions which are preventing Syria from getting medicines, from reconstructing, causing great hardship to the people of Syria. The United States is doing all that. So it's quite absolutely in the center of torturing Syria right now.
Mm-hmm. The also noticeable here is they self-identify. Self-praise is no recommendation. They say, well, what we should be doing in the West is supporting the progressive element and not the nationalists and the dictators, etc. But you know, I notice they don't have a name of a leader that we might identify as the progressive leader. There's no name of a party from Syria that we might all have a look at if they think that they are leaders. There's no program. I don't see anything programmatic other than we're pro-democracy, we are progressive, and you're mistreating us. But there's no demonstration of who they are.
No, there is no demonstration whatsoever. There's nothing constructive there. There's not even any precise demands. Now, as a matter of fact, one of the demands usually for people who want democracy is elections. And as a matter of fact, there have been elections in Syria. And of course, the West, if there's an election in Syria, they say, oh, that's a fake. That's not a real election. Because once the West decides somebody's a dictator, he's just a dictator forever and ever and ever. And I would like to remind people that these same people were calling Milosevic a dictator. And I can tell you, because I was there and I know, Milosevic was perfectly democratically elected and was always in a coalition government. The press was free. He was not at all a dictator, but if we don't like him, he's a dictator. Now, Assad is the head of a single party state, which you can say that's a dictator, all right, although it's not just exactly personal because he inherited this rather by accident. He didn't show any great ambition for the role. He was going to be an eye doctor. And there are signs that he's been wanting to have some reforms. It's not that easy to reform a country, especially when it's in wartime, but he did institute elections. He has shown signs of reform. And maybe if we were friendly to him, we could be encouraging those reforms. But if we're making war against him, we're really not in a good position to tell him what to do.
Yes. Well, your article points out, and I urge everybody to read it, Consortium News, Imperialism of Foolery, that the revolutionary movements, the real ones in history, and there have been some, are focused on social transformation, not a formal parliamentary or American executive style democratic system. The movements have real issues that they're trying to transform their societies, right? They solve the issues of poverty and hunger, etc.
Exactly. I mean, the Russian Revolution came because the country was ruined by war and people were lacking food and the army was losing. The Chinese Revolution is a matter of recovering the independence of the world's, you might say, greatest nation after being subjected to Western imperialism and bringing about social changes. These are huge things, and they were carried out by people who had programs, by the way, who were known leaders with programs. The Russian Revolution, the Chinese Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, you have leaders with programs. You don't have university professors scattered around the West saying, we want self-determination.
Again, we're speaking to Diana Johnson, and the article is in Consortium News, Imperialism of Foolery. Again, Diana, it seems to me very important that here we are, post-World War II, allegedly we're going to end colonialism, and that was part of the project of the United Nations. But these writers, I think all that is just confetti or not important. And they, for example, they say, well, if you're going to criticize the US, you have to talk about Russia in Syria. But as the international community is constituted, Syria is a sovereign country exercising its right to buy weapons or get support from Russia. But a matter of that kind, they think that, oh, well, who cares about that? But that's fundamental.
Yeah, I know. I mean, this is so silly. You have this giant, this incredibly aggressive United States with its ideology that we must decide for the world, that we must have world leadership with all the weapons, with all the nuclear weapons, with all of the aggressive thing. And then you say, oh, but if they attack someone, they're an imperialist too. I mean, the moment you stand up to them, then you're an imperialist, and we must condemn them too for resisting. That makes them an imperialist. Russia gave up the Soviet Union. It gave up the Baltic states. It gave up Ukraine. And then we're accusing them because after the United States organized or sponsored or backed an overthrow in Ukraine mobilized by fascists, Russia took back with the people of Crimea, who had always wanted to be in Russia, by the way. They always had. And it was against the will of the people of Crimea that Khrushchev gave Crimea to the Ukraine. And from the time the Ukraine was independent, the people of Crimea wanted to return to Russia. And so they voted to return to Russia. And that is self-determination. But these people don't recognize that kind of self-determination, which was democratically voted by the people.
Yeah. Indeed. And we're, again, one of those ugly situations where the U.S. is exercising its old attitude of diktat, and we have this new expression which these writers seem to buy into, our values, as opposed to true international values as expressed through the development of the United Nations. Diane, I want to ask you, we've left out the name of Noam Chomsky. In many ways, this teeters on the use of his name. I'm very struck by it, that I doubt that there'd been any traction or interest in this if we have the politics of putting together petitions, and so the name of Noam Chomsky appears here. I find this, the language used, really not to be his by reputation, not his language. It's rather striking and embarrassing situation, isn't it?
Well, I leave it to him to be embarrassed if he's willing. I don't it. I think he knows Gilbert Achcard rounded up the signatures, and he had the names of the targeted journalists taken off to persuade Chomsky to sign. So instead, it's something that insults a lot of people without mentioning your names, but you can guess who they are. I don't think that's really much nicer. But apparently Chomsky thought that it was better not to mention the names, but the insulting language and the inaccuracies remain.
Okay. And that it just actually you cite Chomsky in a way against himself, because if you pointed out, as of course he's come in for a lot of attacks over the years for his writings, and they ask him, why do you criticize America? And he said, well, it's my government. That's the one I have some say about. But in this case, he's kind of gone off that tack. But I thought it was good that you cited that. And again, we're speaking to Diana Johnson, and I want to say, by the way, I urge people to go to the Consortium News article by Diana, Imperialism of Foolery, because this is an argument about who's fooling who. But in it, you have a quote, you are quoted, they've highlighted, and it says, democracy can only be brought to a nation by its own people. And I urge people to read, there are many comments, about 39 comments on your article. And many of them went back to that quote. And it seems to me their criticism of American foreign policy turns on that, that it's not up to the United States to deliver democracy.
Exactly. I mean, that's really the core of the basic, if there's one basic mistake in that letter, it's this assumption that our support, that we, especially we on the left, now for one thing, this going around and saying I am on the left and therefore I am so good, I don't go around defining myself as what I am. I say what I think and I try to be honest, and I don't care about labels of being an anti-imperialist or a label or left or anything else. I'm just trying to be truthful and serious. And all of this thing, if we on the left will support, but what do you mean by support? You know, how in the world can these leftists support anybody in a country other than by using US military force? By US military, how are Western leftists supposed to support democracy in Syria? Well, they haven't got any leverage there. The only leverage is that they can try to manipulate US power. And of course, that's what all these people are trying to do. And one of the great harms of American foreign policy is that foreigners from, it started with all these Eastern Europeans in the Cold War, Ukrainians, for example, who come to the West and we don't like our government, and they want the United States to come and help them change it. And so the United States has been under very unfortunate influence of malcontents from all over the world who want to use U.S. power to get themselves in a good position in the country they come from, instead of doing it themselves.
Well, Diana, it's been great talking to you. I really urge people to read this article, Imperialism of Foolery, Consortium News, April the 7th. I take my hat off to you for that article, and also to those really brave and smart journalists, investigative journalists that you cite.
They're great. I'm too old to do all this sort of stuff, and I that's my little tribute to the people who are doing the job that I can't really keep doing.
Yeah, I think it's really very important you call attention to that, to their work. Thank you very, very much for being our guest.
Well, thank you very much.
And this is the Tato Report, CIUT 89.5 FM.